If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Hi there, I'm Rebecca Lowe. Welcome along to the latest edition of the Premier League on NBC podcast, where you can get the latest can't-miss content from NBC's coverage of one of the best leagues in the world. Be sure to tune in on weekends at 7 a.m. Eastern for Premier League mornings on NBCSN and Peacock Premium. But for now, we hope you enjoy the latest edition of the Premier League on NBC podcast. The two most important incidents from the second half. The Lukaku chance before the goal, Robbie.
Yeah, it's two Belgian superstars, Rebecca, who have contrasting fortunes. We talked at half-time about creating a chance for Lukaku. Chelsea do it just after half-time. He gets played through. And I think when you've been bought to this football hub for this kind of money, I think you've got to be finding the back of the net. There's it, flies it over. And with that, the chance had gone.
And then the goal, Dan.
From De Bruyne, he's just an absolute genius. It's a lovely ball in from Cancelo, and then he just lets it go into his path. Conte tries to bring him down to no avail. He doesn't go down. And it's just a brilliant strike. He actually uses Silva and bends it around Silva, but you just see with Kepa, he takes one step to his right, so he's never going to get back into position. And it's been a criticism of Kepa that he's been beaten far too often from outside the box, but take nothing away from De Bruyne. Absolutely outstanding finish from a world-class player.
Well, Chelsea got themselves into positions, didn't they, certainly in the first half, to do better and to get something out of this game. Do you think that they will feel they fought hard enough to stay in this title race today, Robbie?
Well, if they're taking the chances that came along with Becca, listen, you go to Manchester City, you go to the Etihad, you know they're going to have more ball than you, you know they're going to create things. But Chelsea had good looks at the goal. But when you look at this Manchester City team, and it's a day when you're thinking, what are they going to do it? They believe in their football, they believe in what they do. And if there's one man that sort of sums up what City are, just understated brilliance, it's Kevin De Bruyne. I mean, he rides a tackle to show physicality. He's got the football IQ to understand when the chance is there. And he has a technical ability to find the back of the net. And that 12 wins on the spot puts Chelsea out of the race and pretty much hands the title to them.
The difference between City and Chelsea today was?
In general, individual brilliance. I look at Manchester City, they've got players that can create something from nothing. And there's a number of them in the team. Chelsea haven't had that play since Eden Hazard left, and that's the problem. And they had a couple of good chances today, but didn't take advantage. But they're the difference makers, the individual brilliance within that Man City team.
Do you think when they were buying Lukaku, they thought they were buying that?
I think they were, but at the end of the day, when you buy a player like Lukaku, you have to build a team around him. They've not done that.
But he gets a one-on-one, Dan, just at the half-time that we looked at. That's why you're buying Rebecca.
Yeah.
You buy a centre-forward to get you those goals in those games, and then you might be able to hang on. That's a big, big miss for Lukaku in the game. And then De Bruyne goes and does what he does.
Yeah, and that is the difference. You know, Manchester City, the way they go about it. Chelsea and Manchester City are both collectives. We know how many different goal scorers they have. But when the pressure's on, Manchester City have this individuality, which is on another level.
Title race done?
Done.
Great sound.
Kevin, you've scored some important goals in your time, but that must be right up there.
Yeah, obviously, you know, it's a big game, and I think, they came here, they had a very good plan. They were very tight defensively, but I think we played a pretty good game, and yeah, obviously it's nice to score the goal. It's important because it's the only one. But I think the team played very well today.
Feels like a huge step to the title, no doubt.
But I think we knew if we win today, we make the gap bigger on them, on the title. You know, we don't have to look at that. We've been in this situation before where we had points ahead, but even I think the second year we were the same points behind, and a lot of things can change and the momentum can swing very quickly. But I think the team was focused on the job that they needed to do, and that's the only thing that we really can do.
You pretty much bossed possession out there today. Just that one bit of quality from you just got away from Kante and then used the defenders to curl it around. Nice finish.
Yeah, I think I just got away from him on the right time, and I was looking where the spaces are, but they were dropping off. So then I just found that little angle, and yeah, it worked perfectly.
That's an understatement. What our commentary team at the Etihad for this one on Peacock this morning. Lee Dixon and Arlo White. Nobody can live with Manchester City, chaps.
They certainly can't. 12 wins in a row and they've broken the back of the title race, really, haven't they? Only Liverpool, realistically, maybe had to hunt them down, and that's a long shot. Tale of two Belgians in a way. If Lukaku record signing takes that chance, it's a different story, and it allowed Kevin De Bruyne to curl home the winner. Is that the difference between the sides at the moment?
It's the obvious difference. I think that you know, the boys talked about it in the studio about that miss just before the goal and before half time, and you know, when that, if that goes in, then it completely changes, because the plan was decent in the first half from Chelsea. Didn't really create an awful lot. Man City had a lot of possession, but then when that chance is missed, you kind of go, do you know what, it's going to be one of those moments. And City are so relentless, the way that they just grind you down. They never give the ball away. They're always probing at your weaknesses, and eventually they will break through at some point. And the fact that it was Kevin De Bruyne, the fact that it was such a brilliant goal, just typifies this group of players and what Pep's got at, you know, at his fingertips. And they can change the direction of attack at any moment. And, you know, it goes from one to the other, and you're fascinated by watching Silva, and the next minute it's De Bruyne and Foden. It's just relentless, and they're just a brilliant football team, and no one's going to stop them.
Not from winning the league. Chelsea's season, Rebecca, is not over. They're still fighting on four fronts at home and abroad in cup competitions, but as far as the Premier League goes, surely it's a bridge too far for them.
Arlo Lee, thank you very much indeed. As you say, Liverpool, the only ones really, realistically, who can catch them, but they have 14 points to make up and two games in hand. But they don't have Mane and Salah, of course, for the rest of this month. How do we view this Manchester City team? It wasn't two or three weeks ago, Robin Musto sat in that chair and said this is the best team we've ever seen in the Premier League.
We're getting to that point, Rebecca. We talked about it, didn't we, before the game in the warm-up shots, where, you know, usually at this stage, people have worked it out and try to stop it, or they copy it because it's that good. Teams can do neither. It's different. It's possession-based. It's people finding different routes. It's getting in areas that hurt you. And it's all been done, by the way, without a recognised centre-forward. Generally, every team that wins a title has a 20-plus goal man at the top of the pitch. Pep's doing it different. And today, it was Kevin De Bruyne's day. We've seen Bernardo Silva's day. We see Raheem Sterling, the player of the month in December. He has his time. Some individual at some time with all that possession finds a way to win them the game.
If I'd said to you that in January there'd be 14 points clear of Liverpool and 13 clear of Chelsea without a recognised centre-forward, if I'd said that to you in August, you wouldn't have believed it, would you?
Yeah. I wouldn't. I had Chelsea as my favourites after they signed Lukaku, but what Manchester City do, and I go back to Arteta when he played, obviously Arsenal played Manchester City earlier on in the season when Manchester City beat them 5-0. He said that Guardiola's dream is a false nine. And you can see how everything works. And the beauty of this Manchester City team, yes, you've got the goalkeeper, you've got the back four and the one defensive midfielder. The rest of the team, they just go all over the place. And it's so hard to mark.
But it's coordinated.
Yeah,
then, it's coordinated going all over the place.
It's
as well.
So difficult because as a defender, you want a man to mark. You can guarantee, you look at the back five of Chelsea today, at one time they will have been marking four or five different players, and it's so difficult to deal with. And it's not necessarily the man on the ball, it's the space created by other runners, and they just always find a way.
And at the start of the season, Bex, we sat here and said, it's a four-horse race. And then United were inconsistent. We went, it's a three-horse race. And we're mid-January.
Is it a two-horse race?
It's still a two-horse race if
with
Liverpool win the two games and then listen, we'll know. But we've seen Manchester City in the past. We know Pep's teams. They're not going to get this.
They manage games really well because they've got players that can play multiple positions. They can rest players at certain times because they've got other players that can come in and play all over the pitch.
Pep, that's a massive result in the context of this season. One that you feel well-deserved?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
In terms of possession, in terms of performance?
No. The way we played, everything we have done. So we cannot forget against which team we played. So the European champion, and you are there in the touchline, and you realize how incredible they are. So, and you try to find the spaces, but they are not. So they defend duels, and yeah, it's you know, football. They waiting for the transition to punish us, and we won for one transition. So with how good they defend, we create enough chances to win, especially the intention to go to try to win the game from the minute one. The only problem we had is because after 1-0 they make a step up, and in that moment we make transitions and we lose. And when you open the game with Mason Mount at the end, with Hudson-Odoi, with Timo Werner, with Lukaku, now is in dangerous position. But again, the team was were brilliant.
And you mentioned the goal, the transition, looking for that moment of pure class. And Kevin De Bruyne, he always delivers it, doesn't he?
Yeah, yesterday we spoke together and said, so since we were together, because for day one we are together, you know, all we have, we won, what we have done it together. So, and I want to push him to do it more and more and more, because as a world-class player, and have the humility and humble to do everything for the team. And it's not easy to find that. It was player of the year in this country, what means he won with the team 3 Premier Leagues and a lot of prizes. And I still have this, but I want more of him, because I know he can do it. And today, the action that he has done, his long time I could not see it, and I'm so satisfied for him.
And he battles through injuries, he does the hard work, he sees the crazy pass, and he's a priceless player in the context of modern football now.
Yeah, absolutely, he has everything. He just missed a little bit of confidence this season, he's struggling a little bit, but he knows what he can do. He's incredible beloved for all of us, for that fact, you know, another guy after being what he is and a lot of prizes could behave another step, and it's completely different. So I think his mum and dad has to be so proud.
Yeah, and you kept the intensity throughout the team, through the match. And in fact, Chelsea didn't have a shot or a corner in the first half, which shows how solid you were.
Yeah, I would be able in 180 minutes in this year concede one shot on target against this team. So this is defend well. And sometimes you can defend well back or more up. It doesn't matter, but you know, the way Raheem and Jack and everyone make it, they give everything. So we spoke against that team. I saw the game against Liverpool, the games against Tottenham. It's an outstanding team. It's and be able to control them through the ball and create the spaces, like, it's so difficult. They defend inside, they allow you. So Azpilicueta win all the duels. Win the duels, are the same. So isn't a fantastic team, so that's why I give a lot of credit. So 1 of January, I think we were 1 point down behind Chelsea, 1st of January. So we are in the, you know, today, I don't know, 14 or 15 February, we are in that distance. So 12 victories in a row is incredible. So, yeah, but keep going.
Yeah, last one. Then Newcastle blew a 12-point lead in 96. Man United blew an 11-point lead in 98. Nobody's blowing a 13-point lead now.
Listen, that would be a problem now is is for granted. We have to say, if Liverpool win the game in hand, so it's 8 points. So it's not that the position like Chelsea. But now my job is take out in the brain, in the heads of my players, what try to don't believe what the people is going to say. So I put an example many times recently. So we were winning in the 45 minutes 4-0 against Leicester, and in 20 minutes 4-3. So, of course, we are more than pleased the position that we are, but a lot of job to do. And my job is tell them, and I'm pretty sure I will do it.
Well, at halftime in that game with Manchester United leading and leading comfortably, you said, Robbie Earle, that's the best 45 minutes we've seen under Ralf Rangnick. Mm-hmm. What do you say now?
That Manchester United got themselves 2-0 up in the position where they should go on and win the game, get the victory, get the 3 points, and they couldn't. And the reason that they couldn't is they ran out of steam and they didn't have the organisation and the game management to see it through. If you haven't got the legs, you have to be really well organised, not make mistakes, not get turnovers and be solid. They weren't, but you have to credit Aston Villa for that. Steven Gerrard, Rebecca, has got this ability at half-time or during games to change things, to affect matches. He did it with the way that his team started. He did it with the introduction of Coutinho. And in the end, they deserved a point.
Just quickly, they haven't got the legs. It's January. How can they not have the legs?
Well, because they've been playing in a system where they've been passive, where they've been sitting in. So they're just not used to getting around the pitch for 90 minutes. And that's something that probably won't get addressed until we go pre-season in the summer.
Let's credit Villa.
Yeah, brilliant, absolutely fantastic in the second half. We said it's all about the intensity at half-time, and Villa came out and they got stronger. Manchester United got more tired. First half, Manchester United had 55% possession. The second half, 32% possession. And as Robbie said, is that you can't have contrasting styles and expect the players to be able to do that. You can't get players fit during the middle of the season. It's as simple as that. And the problem is, the more tired you become, the more you lose your concentration, then you lose control of the game. And that's what Manchester United did in the second half.
Yeah, they were comfortable at one point, but it ended up being 3 points thrown away, just a 1 point apiece. Philippe Coutinho off the bench on his Aston Villa debut with his first Premier League goal since 2017, and it gives Aston Villa a point against Manchester United. 2-2, let's hear from the man who set him up, Jacob Ramsey, and Coutinho himself.
Guys, well played. Philippe, they were already quite excited about you. You must be delighted to have made really the perfect start.
Yes, I miss these games. I miss, you know, the Premier League. And like I said before, I'm very happy to be here, to know my new teammates. So, yes, it was a good start. I think we had a good game. We keep believing until the end. We could win the game. But, you know, we didn't lose and we move on.
How did you feel about the day before it all got started, being announced to the crowd? You're a big new signing. Quite nervous, maybe?
Yes, a little bit. You know, I, like always, I don't speak English very well. I prefer
Philippe,
to,
you do.
I prefer to play, to be on the pitch than, you know, to keep saying, keep talking. So I'm happy. It was the first game, so we move on. I want to work hard to improve and, you know, be in better shape.
But it's not just the day that you scored on your home debut. It's also the day that Jacob Ramsey scored his first Villa Park goal. So a Villa lad, that must mean the world to you, Jacob.
Yeah, I think I've scored 3 goals now in the Prem. First two were both away, and I think I said to myself that next one's got to be at home. Obviously, I had the one disallowed against Leicester. But yeah, now happy to get my first Villa Park goal.
Okay. The feeling then, when the whole end erupts and the ball hits the net?
Oh, whole end, singing your name, coming through the academy, that's what dreams are made of. When the ball hit the back of the net, I'm buzzing, but then we're still 2-1 down, so we got to go again.
Yeah, exactly. So at that point, it's just a consolation. So you must feel even better when you roll one across the box for Philippe.
Yeah, his first game since he's come to the club. Everyone's got excited about him. It's a big name. I grew up watching him when he was at Liverpool and at Barcelona. So yeah, when I got the assist for him, even better, really.
Thank you for that.
Well, when Jacob Ramsey used to watch Philippe Coutinho at Liverpool, Ramsey was probably about 12 years old. That's what dreams are made of. That's what he said there. That's what it's all about for
Absolutely.
A kid like Ramsey.
And I love that contrast of what Aston Villa are doing. So good quality operators who come in. Look, Adina's a quality buy. And Philippe Coutinho, they end up buying him $45 million back. It could be good business. But the academy of Villa, they won the FA Youth Cup, I think it was last season. Young players, Chukwuemeka and Ramsey today, you've got all got brothers apparently in the system as well. It's that kind of mix that takes club on and buys fans in even more, because you've got some of your own who are going to learn from great players. But we saw second half a bit of spirit about Villa. And I think Stephen Gerrard, since he's gone into the football club, it's the biggest thing that stood out to me is Stephen Gerrard can affect games. At half-time and with his substitutes, he affects the outcomes.
Yeah, he wants to get a mix, doesn't he, between the youngsters and a few older pros as well. And there's nothing better for a fan than a local boy done good.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Manchester United. Biggest problem right now facing Ralf Rangnick is what, Dan?
Leadership, organisation. That's the big problem for me. When you look at Guardiola and you look at Klopp, the style that Rangnick wants to play is very similar. High pressing, being organised, making it difficult for the opposition to play. The difference is, though, when I look at Liverpool and look at Manchester City, they've got game managers on the pitch. They've got the Van Dijks, the Hendersons, the Fabinhos, the Rodris, the Diaz, the Gundogans, people that can dictate the tempo, people that can manage the game from on the pitch. United don't have that. United are got some wonderful individual players, but that's what they are, individual players. In order to be successful in any way, shape or form as a football team, doesn't matter what style you're playing, you have to have a collective. And I don't see that at Manchester United at the moment. And that goes, when you're winning 2-0, you shouldn't let that slip. But the fitness levels, the lack of the organisation allows opposition back into games.
Yeah, at 2-0, the game should have been done and dusted, Rebecca. And let's, the bigger picture here for Rangnick and Manchester United, they're chasing fourth spot. They're 6 points behind West Ham now. I know they've got two games in hand, but you wouldn't necessarily say they're going to win those two games. They've got to make sure, they've got to start to get things right in terms of the goals, but also the game management.
Well, Stephen, a real roller coaster for you. Is the main emotion pride at your team's character and fight back?
I think that's a big positive now in the end. I thought second half we improved a lot, but it took some honesty at half time. We had to demand more from the players collectively because for the first 25 minutes we were second best. We didn't commit to what we wanted to do. We prepared really in a positive way. We wanted to be aggressive on the front foot and really, you know, jump on Manchester United. We thought there was an opportunity there, but credit to them, they were better than us throughout the first half. But I feel that the first goal we've conceded come off the back of us being passive and second best and giving corners away and silly fouls. So we certainly deserve to be in the position we was at half time. And from there, it couldn't be any worse. So I expected us to be better. I expected the reaction and credit to the players. You know, it got worse at 2-0. We could have went under at that point, but we never. We rolled our sleeves up. We were aggressive. We were winning duels, we were on the front foot, and it was much more like I want Aston Villa to play, and we got something out of the game.
Were you really surprised by that first half, or certainly that first 25 minutes? Because with the new sign-ins, with the way you played on Monday night, it seemed ripe for a really fast start and a great atmosphere, but as you've said already, it didn't happen that way.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised because we prepared well. We've been aggressive in training all week. We analysed the game on Monday night and we took a lot of positives in how we played. But at the end of the day, we lost the game. So I expected the reaction that I got at half-time from the first whistle. And I believe if we would have got that throughout the 90 minutes, we might have been taking more than a point away.
So give us a flavour of what half-time was like in your dressing room.
Listen, just to be honest with the players, you know, when you're playing against Manchester United and good players, if you're second best, if you're passive, if you don't take the handbrake off and commit to the game and leave it out there, you'll get picked off. They'll play around you and they'll score goals. So we needed everyone to commit to what we wanted to do, and that was to be aggressive with our own. You've seen the reaction of the crowd when they see people winning duels and tackles and putting the body on the line. And all our good stuff and our good play come off real honesty, and we didn't have it in the first 25 minutes.
So when their second goal goes in, you're on the touchline with Phil Coutinho stood next to you. Are you just thinking it's just a little bit too late, it's going to be too much for him to affect the game now?
No, I'm just thinking I need to change something. I thought that goal was slightly harsh on us because we improved after the break. It was a lot more like us and how I wanted to look. But when you've got a player like Phil behind you and you're 2-0 down, you know, you want to throw something different at it. I thought Carney come on, showed real power for an 18-year-old kid. Courtney's playing right-side centre-back, who's left-footed, the elder zone. So the subs tonight were really positive. Luca Dean was fantastic throughout the 90 minutes. Phil has a cameo, and we scored two goals, but The slight disappointment I've got is the first half performance. It was a bit of a surprise because of how we prepared for the game.
So, Philippe Coutinho, you did say he was still good.
He is good. Listen, you don't lose talent. I think the key thing for Phil is he needs to be in a place where he feels loved and supported. He needs to be smiling and enjoys football. I think anyone who goes to work and they're not enjoying themselves or in a positive place, it's difficult to perform and be at your best. He's 29 years of age. He's won all kinds of different things and he's still got that hunger to play and contribute. Once we get him fitter and stronger, I've got no doubt he can create and score goals for this team.
How important do you think the fast start he's made today could be? I think the Villa fans were already behind him. He's a massive signing, but just for him, he's come in and he scored immediately.
I'm sure he'll be feeling really positive. I thought he was brave for the goal. He was involved in the first goal as well. So he's had the impact that he probably dreamt of. When I've shouted for him to come onto the pitch, he's probably thinking, you know, can I do something to impact the game? So he should be really pleased with himself. It's not just bringing Philip Coutinho and Luca Dean, the level of players in, it's what it does for other people. You know, Carneys and JJs and young talents playing around these top level players. That's what we want because it'll help their development.
What did you make of Jacob Ramsey today?
First half, a little bit off it, if I'm honest. And we told him that. But I got the reaction I expect. He's a good professional. He's a great kid. He's going to be a top player. But there's still a lot of stuff to work with. Second half, he was outstanding. He was aggressive. He was positive. Got a goal and assist. You can't ask for more than that.
Just before we finish, can I just go back to the substitution you made in the second goal? Were you going to do something different? And then you changed who you were going to sub. It was going to be Ings. You changed to Sanson because the match situation changed.
Yeah, we did. We did change. Yeah, we. You know, I didn't want to send a signal around the stadium in terms of being negative 2-0 down. It was a case
of taking a goal scorer off,
being as aggressive as we can, trying to leave our goal scorers on the pitch for that a little bit longer, and that was the idea behind it.
Yeah, and he looked very angry when he was taking off Morgan. But I presume that's more the mistake than you taking him off.
I asked him that question straight away after the game, and listen, I've got no issue at all with players making mistakes, because they make mistakes trying to do what I'm asking them to do, so that's on me just as much as them. The mistakes are no problem, and he assures me that the reaction was on the back of that, so I have no issue. And I only would have had an issue if it was a reaction over something else.
I thought you made a beeline, I think, at full time for Emi Martinez, just to reassure him that good players make mistakes.
Yeah, you know, people will talk about Emi's mistake, but a goal was coming because we were second best and we weren't good enough for the first 25 minutes. We had to defend three corners. We were giving fouls away. We were getting caught in between people. We weren't making tackles. So the mistakes come off the back of a collective poor performance, if you like. So I've got no problem with mistakes. Players are fine to make mistakes if they're trying to do the right thing. We'll take that on the chin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we were supposed to have the North London Derby kicking off today at 11:30 Eastern. Unfortunately, news yesterday that the Premier League had agreed to the request put in on Friday by Arsenal to have the game postponed. Arsenal say they have an insufficient number of players to fulfil the fixture. The Premier League thought about it overnight and agreed with them yesterday. And so that game adds to the other 20 that have now been postponed due to COVID-related issues. Tottenham, though, not happy. Statement yesterday, we regret to announce the Sunday's North London derby against Arsenal has been postponed. This follows an application from Arsenal to the Premier League on the basis of a combination of COVID, existing and recent injuries, and players on international duty at the Africa Cup of Nations. We're extremely surprised, they say, that this application has been approved. The original intention of the guidance was to deal with player availability directly affected by COVID cases, resulting in depleted squads that, when taken together with injuries, would result in the club being unable to field a team. We do not believe it was the intent to deal with player availability unrelated to COVID. We may now be seeing the unintended consequences of this rule. It's important, they say, to have clarity and consistency on the application of the rule. Yet again, fans have seen their plans disrupted at unacceptably short notice. Good morning. Welcome inside our studio this Sunday morning. I'm Rebecca Lowe, Robbie Earle, Danny Higginbotham alongside me to get into all the news that's going around the Premier League. And this very much is at the top of so many people's agenda. And Robbie, I think what has frustrated not just Tottenham fans, but and worried, actually, Premier League people is that there was just one COVID case, Martin Odegaard, for Arsenal before the Premier League took their decision. Actually, since they've had another positive test. But I think the reason why this has been postponed is they had four players at the African Cup of Nations, one suspension in Granit Xhaka, six potential injuries. But let's not forget, they also sent two players out on loan, Ainsley Maitland-Niles to Roma and Follerin Balogun to Middlesbrough, which, of course, was Arsenal's decision.
Yeah.
So when you take all of that into account, and we have had games called off because of seven or eight COVID cases, just the one COVID case, how do we analyse this?
Difficulty, Rebecca, and it's for one of the first time, doesn't reflect well on the Premier League. Obviously, keeping the Premier League going in COVID is a real difficult thing. And in the past, the Premier League have done a brilliant job at that. I have to say, in recent times, we've had 21 postponements so far this season. Now, as you talked about, early on, it was like COVID cases, 5, 6 and 7, can't get a team out, the game's off. I think we all understood that. This almost feels like we've come to a time where this is different, where there's almost a situation where teams are manipulating what we're doing. And when you talk about the Premier League, I've been fortunate, I've travelled around the world. People love its integrity. People love its purity. People love the intensity. People love that we don't have a winter break. And for 9 months, you've got a slog, and then we get at the end of our Premier League table. And I'm just a little bit concerned that some of that integrity starts to be questioned. And I don't ever want to get into a stage where we look at the end of the season and a Premier League table and say, they finished there because they got those games called off around the January-December time, and that would be a bad reflection on the Premier League. So I just hope they can wrestle back a little bit of the power and we can get to playing games on a regular basis again, and not this kind of somebody's ill, somebody's gone African Cup of Nations, somebody's suspended. It just doesn't feel right.
Now, what's important to say here is that many people are saying, well, they should just play their under-23s who had a game on Friday night and put them in. The problem is, it's not actually Arsenal's fault. The problem is that the ruling from the Premier League is that they want 13 outfield players plus a goalkeeper to fulfil a fixture. And then the Premier League themselves don't recognise under-23 players who haven't had an appropriate amount of experience as being OK to play in the Premier League. So if the Premier League themselves are saying, we don't recognise those players, why would Arsenal say, come on, all those under-23s who no one's ever heard of, come and play against Tottenham in the North London Derby?
Yeah, things need to change, and let's not forget it's called the Premier League 2. You know, so you're wanting to produce younger players to then come and play in the first team, as Arsenal have done. What you have to do now is, because it's happening with a number of clubs now, you've got to try and come up with a solution. And I was thinking about it last night, you know, what could the solution be? And I came to the conclusion that, you know, in an ideal world, what you would do, you would turn around to a club and say, right, OK, you've had this game called off and there's a number of teams that have done it. We're not just Arsenal, a number of teams have done it. And what I would be saying is the rearranged fixture, after the initial one was postponed, the only players that can play in that game are the players that were missing due to COVID. So if you're away in the African Cup of Nations, you can't play in it. If you were injured, you can't play in it. If you're new signing, you can't play in it. And I honestly think that will put a stop to all of this, because let's be realistic. The only reason the Arsenal game has been called off is because Xhaka got sent off on Thursday. Other than that, it would have been the same squad. Obviously, I know we're saying about another COVID case, but that was after the request was made. So something needs to be sorted, and it needs to be sorted quickly, because it's just becoming a farce at times.
And just finally, do you think the anger at this North London derby being postponed will now force the Premier League to change their approach?
I think, Rebecca, there's been criticism from all sides. And I do. I just think the Premier League will feel that they need to be more in control of what's happening. And just a quick point to make. This isn't just a criticism of Arsenal.
No.
Because there's many clubs, top, bottom and middle, who've used this to their advantage as well.
And there'll be many clubs thinking we can now use this to our advantage if we haven't before. And that's what, of course, needs to change. One other story that's been developing overnight. Manchester United went to Aston Villa yesterday and put 8 players on the bench. They could have put 9, but they didn't fill that final position. Now, after the game, there was no Anthony Martial in the squad. And after the game, Ralf Rangnick was asked about it. He said this, direct quote, Martial didn't want to be in the squad. He would have been in the squad normally. He didn't want to be. And that's the reason why he wasn't with us. Well, overnight on his Instagram stories. And by the way, this is still there. You can still go and have a look at this. Anthony Martial responded with this. I will never refuse to play a match for Man United. I've been here for 7 years and I never disrespected and will never disrespect the club and the fans. Somebody, Danny Higginbotham, is not telling the truth. What is going on here?
It's so difficult because nobody knows for definite who is telling the truth. But at the moment, it sums the football club up. It sums the culture of the football club. It sums the dynamics. It sums off the pitch, on the pitch. And it's just a mess. It's an absolute mess. I go back to, and I know it's a long time ago, but you're still talking about characters. As a young player, when I was fortunate enough to travel with the first team, you'd be in the dressing rooms after a game, and sometimes they might have won 2 or 3 nil. And they were going toe-to-toe with each other.
The players
were. Because they demand more off each other. Now, if Martial has done what Rangnick is saying, a dressing room that is strong, that is united, doesn't allow this to happen. This would not happen at Liverpool. This would not happen at Manchester City. Yes, we know what's happened with Lukaku, but he's not saying potentially that he's refusing to play. He's done an interview. And it just stinks of where Manchester United are at the moment. It's a huge problem. And that's, like I say, not just on the pitch, off the pitch. They are years behind other teams. And things like this are going to happen. And it just adds to the pressure on the football club, on the manager, on the players, and just the situation that they're in. And it's just a situation that's just not acceptable for a club of that stature.
Well, if Anthony Martial has refused to play, it's an easy solution because he can just be sent off and he doesn't want to play for Man United. We know that anyway, long term. He can be left out. But if Ralf Rangnick is saying that he's refused to play when he hasn't, that's a bigger problem.
It's a real difficult one, Becca. And he said, she said, who's right and who's wrong. It's difficult for us to make comments on. But the reflection on this football club is what is at stake here. And the culture, Daniel talked, the environment, Rebecca, that this would come out. Now, if Anthony Martial has refused to play for this football club, people say, oh, well, get him out. I'd keep him there for 6 months. He wouldn't play him with the kids because I wouldn't want my kids near him. And I'd make it difficult for him for the next 6 months. He'd train morning and afternoon every day while he picks his wages up. And then I'll get rid of him in the summer, if that's wrong. But if Ralf Rangnick has come out and said this about a player who hasn't refused to play, Rebecca, we're in a really dangerous situation. Manchester United are in a really dangerous situation. So at the moment, Anthony Martial is surplus to requirements. But if a manager says that to him, there's going to be fallout with players who are playing at that football club, and that has bigger connotations. And for Manchester United, this great football club, to air this in public, and I don't like to do this, but we go back to Sir Alex Ferguson, who ran this football club with great efficiency and to great success. This would never happen. This would never even have come out. And Rangnick will have a problem, Rebecca, because for the 6 months he's in charge of the dressing room and the 2 years he's supposed to consult, if he's come out and said that about a player and it's not true, I don't think there's any future for him at the football club.
In a word, where are they now compared to where they were under Solskjaer? Better off, worse off, or the same? In a word.
Oh, worse.
We've had some breaking news throughout the course of our show this morning. Everton have fired Rafa Benitez. He was 6.5 months into a 3-year contract. Yesterday, Everton went to Carrow Road to play Norwich, who've been struggling. Hadn't actually scored a goal, Norwich, since November. Yesterday, they scored 2 against Everton. Everton lost by 2-1. The board met last night, and in the last couple of hours, it was announced via Everton's website that they have now fired Rafa Benitez. So he came in following the departure of Carlo Ancelotti, who went to Real Madrid. 6 points they've picked up since the start of October. So they are rock bottom of the form league. Just 1 win in their last 13. They're in 16th position right now, 6 points above the relegation zone. We will bring you post-match reaction from Anfield after Liverpool's win against Brentford and talk about that game, plus bring you the highlights from both matches today. But we've got to reflect on the breaking news. And Danny, I'm going to come to you first. Mm-hmm. So Rafa Benitez fired from Everton. What's your overall reaction to the situation at that club?
Same old, same old. 6 Premier League managers in 8.5 years since David Moyes left. Obviously spent a lot of money in that time. Benitez, when he got the job, there was obviously a lot of people against it. You speak to Everton fans, they'll say, yes, we support Everton, we don't support Benitez. Had a good start. But then the problem that he had was that after the good start, I think it was three wins and a draw in his first 4, he has a specific style, which to a certain extent, you could say is probably now getting outdated in the modern game. The problem was he had injuries then to key players that enabled him to play that he wanted to play to give him the good start. But he carried on regardless. And that, for me, was an issue. Then Marcel Brands goes, which was a big decision. It was either going to be Benitez or Brands. Marcel Brands goes, he's probably been the scapegoat for a while. All of a sudden, Benitez takes charge. He's got more authority. Dina goes, 2 new players come in for over $20 million each. Now he's been sacked. So it's same old for Everton, unfortunately.
That's what's so strange, Robbie, about the situation. As you say, Marcel Brands has gone, so the club backed Rafa Benitez in that one, beginning December. Mm-hmm. Luca Dina, one of their best players, the club backed Rafa Benitez over Dina, who was sold on Thursday and played for Villa just yesterday. Mm. And now today, Rafa Benitez has been fired after giving him so much power.
Mm. The football club's in a mess, Rebecca, and the football's also in a mess because sometimes we see hirings and firings and people go. But this is, and people will know who are in England around the football scene, this is a special football club. This is a club that potentially is top 6. It's going to have a new stadium in 2025. It's got an owner that will put money in. It's got a fan base that's global. It could be a great job, yet it's in a mess. It's in a position where I think it will struggle to attract the kind of people they would want, because it's not a job I don't necessarily think that everybody would jump at. Of course, there'll be candidates. And Rafa got himself in a situation where Marcel Brand threw him overboard, Luca Dina threw him overboard, and then you lose to Norwich, 1-13, it's on you as a manager, and you look around, and there's nowhere else to go. He basically had to go after that result yesterday.
The problem that you have as well is that throughout all the managerial changes, there's been no consistency. There's been no idea of what Everton's identity is. You know, they don't have a specific style. They don't have a specific brand, to the point where yesterday you look at the Norwich game. Within that squad, there was players from five different managers. You bring another manager in, he's probably got his own ideas again. So then you've got a number of players that are playing in the first team that probably couldn't or wouldn't want to adapt to Benitez's style.
Marcel Brand was that guy, wasn't he, Danny? And obviously there was a power struggle and Rafa got him out. So, you know, who's running this football club? Is it the guy you put in charge of the football, or you're going to have that technical director that says, this is what we're going to do?
I also think that Brands was probably made redundant to a certain extent under Ancelotti, because Ancelotti is very much his own man. And then what's happened is, I think they've got themselves to a point this season where it was like, we need a scapegoat. We need to get rid of somebody. And Marcel Brands was probably happy to go because he's getting all the negative criticism for the plays that have been brought in. And in all reality, I'd say under Benitez and under Ancelotti, he had nothing to do with the signings.
How do the Everton fans now trust this board to make the decision on who next comes in?
It's got to be the kind of decision that, I wouldn't say appeases the fans, but is right for the football club, that has a longer-term plan and a longer-term vision and can ignite this football club to back where it is.
OK, let me give you some names that are already coming out. Lampard.
Yeah.
Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
Graham Potter.
Wayne Rooney is a bit Ollie, a bit sort of, for me, a bit romantic, a bit early in the day for him, doing a brilliant job at Derby. Frank Lampard, not quite sure it's the right fit for him. Graham Potter, I like. I'll throw one, two at you. I'll throw in Ralph Hasenhüttl at Southampton. And I'll throw one more of a man over in Italy who loves playing English football, Jose Mourinho.
Mourinho. Is that not similar to Rafa Benitez? Somebody that possibly is outdated that comes back and tries again?
In a way, but he would bring something back to this football club that it's missing.
You've got to love a bit of Jose in the Premier League.
The issue is that we all know the history of Everton. We know how well supported they are. We know what a great club it is in terms of the outside looking in. It's not as attractive as it once was.
It's not attractive at all.
No.
If you're an ambitious manager...
Really?
It's not as... Yeah, it's not as
a wonderful new stadium, Everton. Yeah,
you've got to get there first.
Yeah, you've got to go. They'll have two more managers people now and then.
Fair point.
And you look at someone like Graham Potter, whose star is rising, who I think should be on the radar. He's got a gamble. Can I go in there and clear things up and get this thing right and start playing the football that we know we can and start having success?
Who do you want?
Graham Potter, you look at and you think it's brilliant. I wouldn't leave Brighton for Everton if I'm Graham Potter. You've got to be careful. You have to
really?
You have to be careful of your reputation. Graham Potter's reputation is soaring. The mess behind the scenes at Everton, you can be one of the best managers around, but if things aren't great behind the scenes, then you don't stand a chance. It's as simple as that.
I would.
Graham Potter would be my number one choice. And if I'm Graham Potter, as good as things have gone at Brighton, I'm going away.
Because if you don't take the Everton job as the Brighton manager, I mean, Brighton fans were booing him not long ago. If he doesn't take the Everton job, then arguably he'd look back on that and be like, oh my God, why did I take the Everton job?
He's then waiting for one of the big six. And is he going to get one of the big six?
The problem is, as a manager, you're only as good as your last job. That's it. So we look at a former Everton manager, left Everton, unbelievable, goes to Manchester United. His managerial reputation is decimated in under 10 months.
But he's built it back up, David Moyes.
He's built it back up, but how long's it taken him? Graham Potter now has built this scenario where he's at Brighton, where he'd be like, OK, I can do to a certain extent what I want to do here. My next step has to be the right step, because if he goes to Everton and it doesn't go according to plan, which there's every chance of that happening, then everything that he's done, his reputation just goes down. And that's where I think managers will think twice about going to Everton.
What about Rooney?
Like Robbie says, the Solskjaer scenario, too soon for him, in my opinion. I think he's going to be a wonderful manager in time to come, but I think it's too soon for him.
OK, well, it looks like they're going to give it to Duncan Ferguson in a caretaker capacity, certainly until they've decided to make their move. And Duncan Ferguson knows all about that job. He has done it before. Everton now looking for a new job, a new manager. Liverpool have beaten Brentford today. We enjoyed seeing that three-goal victory for Liverpool. How important for them, really? I mean, it wasn't brilliant from Liverpool, but got the job done.
Got the job done. The goal just before half-time, Rebecca, changes the game. It brightens Brentford's tactic of being deep, trying to break, then always has to change a little bit. Liverpool opened up into the second half. From Liverpool's point of view, clean sheet, three goals, keeps the gap down to Manchester City. Could be, 8 points if they win the game in hand, and that gives them a chance.
From Brentford's perspective, what will Thomas Frank be taking away from that today?
These are bonus games. I know they've done relatively well, but it's been in particular at home against the bigger clubs. So these are bonus games. There's other games which they will look at and say, right, we've got to win these games. But I have no issue with Brentford. I think they'll be absolutely fine.
OK, well, Brentford right now sitting in 14th position, but they have another chance to rise up the table a little bit later on this week. Good day at the office for Jurgen Klopp. And when you look at the next three games, Robbie, it's interesting. Mm. Arsenal away in the League Cup, that second leg, it's 0-0 from the first. Palace away in the league, and then Cardiff at home in the FA Cup fourth round. The two cup competitions, League and FA Cup, neither of which Jurgen Klopp has ever won in his time since 2015 at Liverpool. Do you think this little run takes on added importance now that the league is really difficult to win?
Yes, and to that point, Rebecca, I'd also say the Palace game is like a cup game as well. They've got to win it. You know, go and win that game to give a chance of catching City. But the other two are important. League Cup and FA Cup are important competitions, and Jurgen Klopp at times has not put as much store in those competitions. He often played weakened teams, but he was strong against Arsenal last week. I think he'll go strong this Thursday to get to a final. And I think Liverpool fans would want their team in domestic cups and winning domestic cups, as well as challenging for the real big stuff when that comes along.
Maybe being a little bit more like Chelsea, who just pick up silverware every year, pretty much, no matter what it is.
Yeah, I think so. And if you look at the FA Cup game, they beat Shrewsbury at home. I think they went behind. But the likes of Van Dijk, Konate, Robertson, Fabinho played. Firmino came on. So, you know, they are giving it the importance. And obviously, like you say, they play Cardiff in the next round. So it'll be something that they'll be aiming for, I'm sure.
Welcome back inside the studio. Paul Burmeister alongside Danny Higginbotham and Tim Howard. So both teams get a point. Tim, I'm wondering, though, which team impressed you the most?
Well, you know, too many draws for Brighton. That's their 11th of the season, but that's the good variety. They impressed me because they play a certain way. They don't back down. Potter is very good tactically. He'll change his formation. Today he went three at the back. Mm-hmm. He took his wing backs. Press high. He knew he was going to have to press high. They're a good bunch. They're a resilient bunch. Chelsea have just seemed to get soft at the core. They've lost that resiliency that we've come to know under Tuchel. They're sputtering at the moment. Chelsea just don't seem like they have that fire in their belly at the moment.
They're soft at the core, sputtering. Well said, understood. How'd you see it?
Brighton, I thought, were excellent. Graham Potter doing a wonderful job. And, you know, they are becoming more efficient now in terms of putting the ball in the back of the net. And sometimes when you play against the top teams, you need to ride your luck. You need to have luck. I don't necessarily think that Brighton had that. As for Chelsea, probably don't think it's mentioned enough, but when you look at this Chelsea team, there's two huge players missing. Chilwell, Reece James. The last time they both played together was Leicester City away, where they were fantastic, won 3-0. Since then, you know, they've played 11 games and won only three. Mm. And I think that's the problem. And because of that, due to that, they've become more predictable. There's very little width. So teams are playing compact against them and saying, OK, if you want to go anywhere against us, you can go out wide. There's nobody out wide. So they're trying to go through the middle still. And the opposition have got so many players there. So they're finding it really difficult. So Tuchel needs to come up with a solution. At times, I think, like he did against Manchester City at the weekend, I think he overthinks things because he's trying to come up with a solution. But as of yet, he hasn't got one.
A perspective, I think, on Chelsea is pretty good. They've played 23 matches. They've only lost three times. Mm. That's very good. But they're winless in their last four. Yeah. What's kind of gone missing there?
Well, Danny, make a good point there. It's so with a team that has so many top players, they spent so much money, it's hard to say it's down to one player, one person. But Reece James, as the wing back, is so ball dominant. He starts the game as a wing back and then plays the rest of the 90 minutes almost up as a winger and in the midfield. He brings players into the game and makes them better. He is such a focal point, and they're missing that. Look, on the other hand, with Brighton, they're missing that cutting edge. But it excites me for this Brighton team because they take the ball. They're willing to fight and scrap when they have to. It looks like good football, silky football. They're just missing that little cutting. We saw Danny Welbeck today, had a few good chances, didn't really hit the target or test the goalkeeper. They're looking for that top striker.
I think the key thing is when you look at the wing-backs, so what you've got with Reece James and Chilwell, the issue that you have when they're not playing is that you have nobody stretching the game in terms of width-wise. When they're playing, the full-backs get dragged out. And when the full-backs get dragged out, all of a sudden Chelsea can then go through the middle and get three against two in their favour. And that's something that they're struggling with at the moment.
Let's react to the first game that we saw here today. I mean, it is the latest comeback win that we have seen in the Premier League. Are you still trying to process what we did see there?
Yeah, because I didn't think, you know, on the day, I didn't think Tottenham deserved it, but they kept going. They felt it did. Bergwijn comes on as a substitute. It's exactly what you want. You want energy. You want passion. You want commitment. You know, you see him score the two goals and the energy that the team showed. They went above Arsenal into fifth place. They're 1 point off of fourth with three games in hand. I mean, a game where you think Conte is going to get his first loss as Tottenham manager. Mm-hmm. I mean, they pulled it out. Absolutely brilliant.
You look at both the games. Now, everything has just squeezed so much. 2 points between seventh and fourth. And it's so hard to call. You know, you look at Manchester United going to Brentford, you think it's going to be a tough game Manchester United won. Tottenham up until injury time, you're thinking they've lost this game, they come back into it. So it just makes everything more intriguing for that race. We know how important it is for teams to get into the top four, and it's just closed everything right up.
If you're Leicester, what are you thinking right now?
You're devastated. When you lose in that fashion, it really hurts, because I thought they were actually very good and probably deserved all 3 points.
Guys, congratulations. Harry, first of all, how did that happen?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, what a rollercoaster of emotions that was. I think we fully deserved the victory, to be honest. We were the better side. Disappointing to obviously go 2-1 down with maybe 15 minutes to go, but we were just creating the chances. And you just got to never give up, you know. This guy come on, made a big difference. But to get two goals like that in stoppage time was... games that you'll never forget for the rest of your career, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Stephen, look, you've been out, injured. You come back, you make an instant impact and a huge one. What did it feel like out there? And we saw your celebrations.
Yeah, what Harry said, the roller coaster of emotions, you know. And of course, if I come on, I want to show myself. And yeah, today I scored two goals. Yeah, I'm really happy.
Well, it's a combination that the manager has wanted to work, hasn't it, with yourselves and with Lucas as well. Harry, you hit both posts, you hit the bar. Most importantly, though, you did hit the back of the net. Eventually, your 250th club career goal. Those are the kind of numbers that you would have dreamed of as a kid, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. Those landmarks are always nice. I should have had a couple more out there for sure today. I'll be thinking about them tonight. But when you win, it doesn't hurt as much. And just credit to the team, credit to all the boys for not giving up, you know, all the way to the final whistle. And, just a great night for us.
And for you, Stephen, just to be back from injury, how much are you looking forward to now building on this victory, especially with those games in hand and the games coming thick and fast from now on?
Yeah, we have a lot of important games Sunday again. And, yeah, what Harry said, we need to build on from this. And we've showed that we are a team, you know, and we came back from 2-1. So, yeah, we need to go.
Harry, you can't wipe the smile off your face, can you?
I know. And full credit to Stevie as well. Not been easy for him, injuries, but he's been working hard behind the scenes, and credit to him for obviously scoring the two goals today, working hard. That's what our team's about, putting everyone on the line, whether you're playing, whether you're not playing. So full credit to this guy today, for sure.
Absolutely. Thank you very much,
guys.
Well
thank
done.
You. Cheers.
See you.
That does it for this edition of the Premier League on NBC podcast. Be sure to check out other episodes where you'll get a collection of our most spirited in-studio debates, as well as exclusive on-site access. Plus, don't miss out on Premier League mornings, weekends at 7 a.m. Eastern on NBCSN and Peacock Premium. Bye for now.